Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today we are going to be talking about getting your project on a roll. This is the question of how do you keep and gain and keep momentum on a project? You know, if when you really do get a project going, so you're working on it regularly and you're making progress on it and you're seeing results, it's easier and easier to keep working on it and to really accomplish big things. But sometimes going from zero to momentum is quite difficult. And I'm hoping that this is going to be very timely for some of you. Some of you are probably trying to get some projects up and running before the end of the year. Maybe you're buying presents or you're getting cards out or you're preparing for guests. And that all needs to be done. Like there is a deadline, depending on exactly what you're celebrating. You've got 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks and you need to get it done. And it needs to get up to speed. It needs to get going. It needs to get done. It's really important to get it on a roll. On the other hand, some of you may not be actually may want to be having a kind of quiet December, but are thinking about getting a project on a roll in January. You've got some resolutions or a goal that you want, a New Year's goal that you want to set, that you want to get going. And it can be very helpful to be thinking about how are you going to hit the ground running January 1st? If you can put some thought into that now in December, in your off time, in your downtime, you can really hit the ground running and get your New Year's project off with a bang. So that's what I'm hoping to help you with today. Now, the good news is that this is absolutely doable. The bad news is that there is no magic wand you can wave to create momentum. It does take a certain amount of work. There are a couple of different things here. One is you probably are already busy. You've got 24/7 planned. Some of that is sleep. Some of that is hanging out with your family. Some of that is your hobbies. And, you know, that time has things that it can be used for already. So putting a new project in is always going to take some work. It's going to take some prioritizing to decide what you're not going to do. And, you know, you've been doing stuff. So there's something you're not going to do if you put in a new project. And it's probably going to take some thinking about, first of all, the thinking work about what the priorities are. Why is this more important than something else? What can be dropped off? But also when and how to put it into your schedule, because you can really disrupt your life if you just willy-nilly decree you're going to do it at some time. You can disrupt everything. I've had that, you know, decreed I was going to go on an exercise program and suddenly couldn't get my meals, you know, right? It's like I didn't figure out how it was going to fit with everything else. So there is work that needs to be done, thought work. But on the other hand, you do not want the thought work to overtake the project. You do not want to bog down in thinking about how you're going to do this. You want, because that does not get you momentum. Thinking about what you're going to do is necessary. But if all you do is think about what you're going to do, you never do get momentum on the project. The momentum comes from doing the work and starting to see results. That's really critical. So what I'm going to be talking about on this call is sort of my best practices. How do you add the minimum amount of overhead, the minimum amount of thinking overhead to get some new project working for you? And that's what you need in order to get work flowing productively as quickly as possible. So the way this is going to work is that to start, I'm going to explain exactly what momentum is, what I think momentum is, and the kind of thinking that ensures it. I think that's kind of a theoretical, high-level overview that's very helpful to have clear. It's not a mysterious. And then I'm going to turn to this minimum daily and weekly overhead that you need to try to keep doing that thinking, to be able to keep figuring out. It's going to turn out that to maintain momentum, you need to do some thinking on a regular basis to tweak what you're doing to keep it on the roll. It's not, it's like there's a game they still play at Wellesley with hoops. They race trying to bat hoops that use a stick, and you keep the hoop running with just a stick. And you need to be careful because if you hit it wrong, the hoop will fall down. So you need to be, and you also want it to go in the right direction if you're going to win the race. So that's what you're trying to do when you get your project on a roll, is you want to be hitting the hoop with a stick to get it to go forward as fast as you can. That's what you're trying to do. And it's the thinking part is the hitting the hoop with the stick. Now, as I said in the advertisements for this, this is a teaser call for my group coaching program called Launch. So Launch is going to start, the next one is going to start on January 1st. And this is a program in which I support the participants so that they can achieve a major goal in 8 weeks. And we've gotten a lot of amazing things accomplished in the launches. I think this is going to be the 10th launch or the 11th launch. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that later on in the call, partway through. But then at the top of the hour, I will open it up for questions, or close to the top of the hour, for questions and for coaching, because I do want this call to pay off. If you have a project you want to get on a roll, I want you to come away with some really actionable advice on that. And I'm, you know, for teaser calls, I really like to help anyone who wants help. So I will stay on. Nominally, it ends at the top of the hour, and then a Q&A starts. I'll stay on until I've answered the questions. I'm happy to do that. One thing I want to say is what I'm going to talk about the issues, kind of the theory part of it, or the ideas of it first. If you have a clarification question for that, please put it in the chat. I don't really want to turn that into a discussion, but if you have a clarification, please put it in the chat, and then all the other questions we'll handle at the end. Okay, does this sound like the right place? You guys glad you're here? Sounds like a good place. Okay, I'm getting at least some positive feedback on that. So let's start. What does it mean to get your project on a roll? It means that you've got momentum. And this is an analogy to physics, right? In physics, momentum, there's two different kinds of momentum, or the momentum of something. A moving object has momentum that relates to its weight and its speed, right? A object at rest has inertia, meaning that it takes an extra force to get it into action. And that's the issue of momentum. That's when you study momentum in physics, you talk about inertia and how much force needs to be applied to something to actually get it into motion, and then what momentum it has once it's in motion. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about from inertia to momentum. What do we do? What do we do with that mentally? And I think there are two really critical things you need. The first is you need to really understand why you are doing this, right? You've got to have a goal that you care about. And it needs to be something that you think is worth putting in this extra effort, because to get from zero to momentum is going to take some effort, and that needs to be worth it for you. And then keeping it in momentum is going to take some effort. It's, you know, there are times you can actually create a habit, but not if it's a thinking task. If it's a thinking task, it's always going to require effort. It's not going to ever be on autopilot. And so the kinds of things that we were talking about here, like Christmas things, or like maybe someone wants to start a writing project in the new year, or a diet in the new year, or who knows what. These are not things that go on autopilot. They do require attention and effort, continued effort. So the first thing is you need to know why you're doing it so that it's worth putting in the effort. Related to that, you need to see how it is that you can overcome the obstacles. Like, for example, if you are thinking about going losing weight in 2025, right? You know, most people who set a losing weight goal have set it before and has not succeeded very well. So one of the things you're going to need to do to get some momentum is you're going to need to address that. You're going to actually need to have an answer to the question of, How is this going to be successful when it wasn't successful before? How am I going to do this differently? And you need a process for that. And one of the things that bogs people down is that, of course, if you tried it before, you tried what you thought was the logical thing to do. And if that didn't work, it means you need to get creative. And the first step for getting creative is to really look at, well, why doesn't this work? And that is not the most pleasant thinking that people do. That is where you can, if you aren't careful, you can fall into some kind of self-doubt, like, oh yeah, no, I didn't do it because I was just a slacker there, right? Or, you know, self-criticism or self-doubt. I was a slacker. Oh, I really don't know what to do. It was really hard. I just am not up to it. All this negativity can come around when you look at past setbacks and failures, and you need to have a way to deal with that. I'm going to be talking about that here on the call. I said it was two parts, but there's really a third part, which is that as you're doing the work, this is to maintain momentum. So to start, you have to have a goal that you really care about. And you have to have some clue how you're going to do it and it's going to succeed this time. But then to keep the momentum, what you need is you need to see results as you go. And this is, I think, the biggest problem that people have. And one of the reasons, I'm going to try not to be too focused on launch, but there's going to be another teaser call for launch on December 30th called Set Goals That Motivate. And one of the biggest problems I've seen with people, in addition to this, the thing I'm going to be talking about here, is that they aren't clear on how to set goals so that they can see results in a couple of weeks. And so I coach people on that. So I just want to say, if that, I think, is a key to getting momentum, is to actually see how you genuinely believe you're going to get results in 2 weeks. So like if you're working on a book, like I'm working on a book, you know, a book doesn't get done in 2 weeks, and a chapter doesn't usually get done in 2 weeks. But I can, for example, get an outline of a chapter done in 2 weeks, or I can get a theme for a section of it done in 2 weeks. There's always some output that I can get that I can see is a result that is moving me forward. The same thing with cards. And like if you're sending Christmas cards, you know, if you spend all your time on the list and none of your time actually sending out cards, you can really get bogged down, and you can come January 1st and you've done a lot of work and you have nothing to show for it. And I actually believe when you are limited on time, you need to find ways to set the goals so that you can get results as you go. So if over 4 weeks you're working on cards, you actually send some cards out within a week or two. That's a goal setting process that I recommend. And it's part of the thing that keeps momentum going. So I said, there'll be another teaser on that on December 31st, another free teaser. The bottom line here, the general point, a thing that's really relevant for here, for today, is that getting momentum on a project takes proactive problem solving. It takes it at the beginning, so you can see how you're going to handle the problems you can see. And then it takes it during, when you actually run into the problems. And that's why it's something we talk about in the thinking lab, because these are things you need to think about, and thinking tactics can help it with you. It's not, and in particular, I mean, sometimes there are some projects that if you just get over the hump, it's like you can finish. And so something that you can do in a few days, sometimes all you need to do is get over the hump. And then, you know, the end is in sight and you just zoom to the end. But it's particularly important to have a method to maintain momentum. If for certain kinds of projects, so one kind I like to think of as an initiative. An initiative is a project that is actually going to be disruptive. It's either going to be emotionally disruptive or physically disruptive or intellectually disruptive. So for example, if you have a goal that you're going to declutter your house, this is a very disruptive goal, right? First of all, it literally makes hay with the you take things out of closets and rooms get disorganized, right? Your stuff gets all disorganized as part of it. That is very disruptive. The only way to declutter is to throw things out. This means things that you have kept because they were of some value to you, you need to decide not to keep and to throw away. This is emotionally disruptive, okay? Because you need to mourn these things. You need to make, and it's intellectually disruptive because you need to make all these decisions. And so this kind of a project, you are going to need, you know, to kick that hoop on a daily and weekly basis. You're going to need to keep regrouping because you're going to have new things coming at you that are making this difficult. As you start the project, it has built into it a can of worms that you're going to have to deal with. That's what I call an initiative. And I think that it's helpful to realize some projects are like this. And the other thing I recommend on initiatives is only do one at once. It's really hard if you have two of these going. You can get a lot of projects done in parallel, but only one initiative, only one that is truly disruptive, because that is going to need emotional overhead. And you just, if you try to do two that need emotional overhead, you won't make much progress on either one of them. Another time that getting over the hump may not be enough is if you have a big deadline, because it's not enough to just get started. You need to accelerate and get finished. And you really need to monitor where you are and not let up the gas, which is, you know, so something like, I mean, I don't know that, and I couldn't do this. I think there are some people who, you know, start their cards at Thanksgiving and then just, you know, percolate along a little every day. It's not a high enough priority for me to ever get to do that. But so for me, I need to ramp up and get it done in a few days or else it's just not going to happen. And the reason is that I just don't have the extra time to put it in. I need to make it be as efficient as possible. And that means I need to keep reducing it to its essentials. And so that's what time pressure does. Time pressure says you're going to need to keep thinking, how do I make this task smaller? How do I make this task easier? How do I make this task not conflict with other things? And that's really an essentialization problem, but it's amazing. If you really have a deadline, people are actually pretty good at this. You know, this is why people say they only get stuff done on deadlines. Because when you actually have a real deadline, you can be incredibly creative about how to slim down this task to just get the essence done. And part of the thing you need to do is to do that on demand, as opposed to saying, well, if I don't get it done this week, I could do it next week. No, because next week you have something else you want to do, like maybe take a vacation. Now, related to that is things that you're trying to squeeze in. So, you know, initiatives are really big, major things you decide to start. Deadlines, it's something that's got to come up and get finished in a short amount of time. But then there are background things. I mean, sometimes you want to have a project, like, for example, actually decluttering the house. Sometimes that actually is a background project. And I guess actually it wouldn't work for everyone as a background project, but for some people it might. Like I had as a background project, redo my office. And so I had, you know, I needed to get new furniture. So I did a little research for new furniture. I needed to figure out how much there was going to be. I needed to decide what was going to stay in the office versus not. And I did this a little bit at a time over about 3 or 4 weeks. And then I ordered all the stuff. And then I had 2 weeks of chaos where everything had to get put back. But the first part, I just needed to fit in. And there, the issue is making sure that you fit something in on a regular schedule. Again, if it seems like it's a low priority item, you somehow have to hold the context that this is important enough to put a little bit of time in every day. So those are the kinds of things, those are the kinds of issues that come up when you try to get momentum on a project. And as I said, if you have any clarity questions about what I've said so far, please put them in the chat. What I want to turn to now is what I think is the number one thing you need in order to ramp up quickly on any of these three kinds of issues or on any project where you're going from zero to a momentum. And I call these three together a scheduling infrastructure, which is a little bit of a weird name, but it's the idea is by infrastructure, it's some regular systems and procedures. It's like your standard operating procedures that are keeping you organized on a daily and weekly basis. And everybody has a scheduling infrastructure. Some of them are very minimalist. Some of them aren't that effective, but they do exist. And the idea is you need some kind of a structure to help you navigate the conflicts between your various projects, between your various priorities. Now, this is different from a time management system. And some of you may have discovered time management systems that really work for you. I mean, I know a number of people, for a while I was a diehard. A number of people really are advocates of David Allen's Getting Things Done, GTD method. And it's got things built into it, a calendar, an inbox, a next action list, a weekly review. It has a number of things built into, and it's like a one-size-fits-all solution. Now, I happen to think there is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all solution. And it was trying to do David Allen's system that convinced me of that, actually. But there are a lot of people who advocate time management systems. And, you know, there's a, you know, Stephen Covey has a time management, you know, set of processes that you may have used. And these are all good. And what I have found over many years, 30 years of working on time management in various ways, is that what you actually need is very idiosyncratic. And that what you need varies. It depends on the current state of, you know, are you working full time or are you retired? Do you have kids at home or are they out of the nest? Do you have hobbies that you're doing regularly or is your time really unstructured? Depending on what your life looks like, you need a different kind of scheduling infrastructure. And there's no way to figure out what is going to work for you by just asking someone else what they do. And so what I've tried to do is figure out how to explain the minimums that I think everybody does need something in three different things. And I'll tell you what they are: daily planning, weekly planning, and some way to track time. And these, I'll tell you, the theme of this section is keep it simple, sweetie. It's got to be really simple. And if you feel overwhelmed by this, I want you to ask. So daily, I think you need at least 15 minutes a day of either of some kind of reviewing and planning. Because every day, if you have something that you're trying to do, say 3 days a week or 5 days a week, you know, you're trying to, a schedule for what you've got to get done between now and the end of the year, you need on a daily basis to refresh your recollection about what's important. It is amazing. You can remember, like if you think about it today, tomorrow you'll remember. The day after, it will be out of your head. It is amazing how hard it is to hold a context of your plans. I was just listening to an interesting book. Someone recommended me this book. It's called Traction. It's for businesses. Businesses a lot bigger than mine. That's okay. It's got a lot of interesting things in it. And he was talking about how you have to have a 90-day planning session with your executive team every 90 days, and you can't skip one because you won't all be on the same page. Well, I totally believe that because I find I'm not on the same page after 3 days unless I actually review. And it doesn't take a lot of time, but it does take a commitment to refreshing your recollection about what the priorities are right now and why you said you were going to do this, right? Just to decide what you're going to get done today and how it's going to fit today. You know, maybe you have a doctor's appointment today. Maybe, you know, someone is coming, you're picking someone up at the airport today. If you are planning to get stuff done, it has to fit around whatever is the terrain of today. And that takes a little bit of thought. And when I say 15 minutes, I really mean that. I think that I think of it as evolving a scheduling infrastructure. And there's a ton of stuff you could do on a daily basis. And I actually do spend more than 15 minutes. I'll tell you what I do later on if that's interesting. But I do that because I have several things that I think I need to do, and then I'm completely convinced are worth it. And I don't, I see that if I do these things, I'm more productive. But that's because I've been working on this for years. And so I've gradually added in things and I figured out the amount of overhead that works for me. But if you don't have any overhead and you're going from 0 to 15 minutes of overhead, I can tell you it is going to feel burdensome. And 15, you are not going to want to do more than 15 minutes. And this is important. If you try to put an hour of overhead, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. If you decide, gee, I need an hour every day to keep track of stuff, you're going to just bog down and you're going to use all your best time just trying to plan the day. And my belief about planning is it should be about 5% of the total effort. 5% of the total effort. You do not want the planning, which takes really hardcore brain power, to use up the brain power that you need for actually doing the tasks. And so that's why I recommend just 15 minutes a day so that it does not feel, in fact, if you can make it 5 minutes, great. If you can just have something that you review and you remind yourself why you care about it, great. That's terrific. If you can do it in 5 minutes, I'm all for it. It needs to stay simple. What you can do in 15 minutes will depend on your skill level. Like, I mean, one of the things that I'd like to talk about is I have, at this point, you know, how I keep track of things has changed over the years. It actually changes about once a quarter. I twiddle with my structure. And I have, you know, what I use now is I have a sheet I fill out every day. Well, and it's got my schedule for the day, and it's got what actually happened in the day. And it has, on the right, it has three good things, which is at the end of the day, I write down three good things that happened. And then at the bottom, I have lessons learned. And I also have a list of all the top priorities. I always have three that I'm trying to get done that day. And then check boxes of everything else that I actually got done that wasn't the top priority, because you can get more than three things done. You just need to know what are the three things you need to get done. Now, that's a fairly complicated piece of paper, but that's not what I used when I started this. When I started this, I had one piece of paper for the whole week, one piece of paper, and I would fold it into pieces. So you had eight blocks, and one of the blocks had my goals for the week. And the other seven, I kept track of what I did in little boxes and no more. So I had, you know, I had like 2 inches by 7 inches of space for each day. That was it. And that was something I could do in less than 15 minutes, and it kept me on track. And that was the right overhead at that time of my life. And then as a result of using that, I got good at certain things. And now I can actually do something a little more complicated in the same amount of time. And that's the way to do it. Don't start complicated, start simple. Keep it simple, sweetie. Keep it related to where you are right now. What can you do right now that would be an incremental daily check-in that would actually help you stay on task? And I do think you need it daily because you've got to activate that context daily. Second of the three minimums that I think everybody needs is some kind of weekly review. And here, I think you really need to limit that to 30 minutes. And this is where I eventually departed from David Allen. Now, I have to say, I saw David Allen in person once. He spoke for an organization I belong to in New York City. And, you know, it was a coup for them to get him because he's, you know, he's a pretty famous guy. And I asked him, I told him, look, I implemented all of your system, but I have a lot of trouble with the weekly review. And he said, well, you've got to do it, which was kind of surprising to me. I was like, but he said, you have to do it because, you know, the situation changes. If you don't actually clear the decks and see what, you know, get on top of how everything is fitting together and what actually happened last week and what has been rescheduled about next week, you really do need to do some high level thinking about that. And the reason that I didn't do his weekly planning was because he had a list of things that you were supposed to do. And I never actually finished his list of things you're supposed to do. I had spent 8 hours trying to do his weekly review and not finish everything he said I should do. And I did it multiple times. And you can't take 8 hours for a weekly review. I mean, who has an entire extra workday that they could put into a weekly review? It can't be done. Now, and that's what happens when you have, and so I'm a fan of David Allen. Don't get me wrong. All the things on that list were something that eventually needed to be dealt with. But it was at a, he could do it because he had all his ducks in a row. I couldn't do it because I still had, at the time I was, I first was reading about getting things done, which is 2004. So this is 20 years ago, actually 2002, 22 years ago, 2004. No, both of those things, the article recommending it came out in 2004. I read the book in 2002. I actually inventoried at one point, I had all my project, I had them in piles. I had 44 piles. I have a picture of it somewhere on the Thinking Lab site. I had 44 projects I was trying to run. That is too many projects, folks. And it's no wonder that I was kind of disorganized, whatever. I was trying to do too many things at once. Well, it took me a while. It took me several years, but I did eventually get it down. I now run about 6 projects or 7 projects at a time. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but you can kind of get your mind around that, right? You can't get your mind around 44 different projects on a weekly basis. You simply cannot do it. So what I learned from experimenting with his process was that I needed something that I could do. And what I eventually figured out is I needed some way to do a weekly review that took only a half an hour, because a half an hour is something that does not feel burdensome. Now, I'll tell you here also, I actually spend an hour on my weekly review these days because I've added in another thing that helps me, which is I literally plan the week. I literally plan all my time. That is not something I recommend you do. It took me, all told, I would say 3 years to get so that I could do that. It's very helpful if you have all the skills in place and all the priorities in place so that you can do that. It is actually very helpful. But developing that was a major undertaking for me. I would never recommend any of you try to go straight to that. It's too hard. You will be discouraged. And I have a lot of tools for not getting discouraged, and I was discouraged. But in a half an hour, you can do a lot. You can review your list of goals. You can review where you went. You can write some celebrations about what you got done this week. And you should always focus on what you got done and then what you want to do next week. Don't focus on what didn't happen. Don't focus on what failed. Focus on the successes. You want to build the momentum by focusing on the values. And again, I don't think there's any way to keep momentum if you don't check in on a weekly basis. There's, you know, I mean, we got the week from, you know, religions, right? Somewhere, some religion years ago decided that we should divide our time up into weeks. But there's something about a weekly schedule. You do need a day of rest once every 7 days. This is like not a rule from God. This is a fact about humans. You really do need a day of rest if you want to sustain productivity over the long term. And someone figured that out empirically a long time ago and made it a religious dictum, but it's true. And there is something, you need a day of rest and then you need to regroup for the new week. The third thing that I think you need, and you see my focus here is really keep it simple, particularly if you don't have any of this structure in place, is some kind of easy, non-disruptive time tracking. Now, I don't mean, you know, as I said, I actually have a schedule and I try to stick to that schedule. That is not what I mean. What I mean is some way to keep track of how much time you put in on your projects. And the thing that I've used for years to help me with this is something called the Pomodoro technique. And I have a recommendation for that on the site. It doesn't have to be that. It can be just jotted notes, like if you're sitting down to work on whatever it is, started at 9 a.m., stopped at 10:30, or afterwards, you just, you know, at the end of the day, perhaps you just mark it down. But you need some way to know how much time you're actually putting in on things. And the reason you need this is that it's very difficult to review how things have gone if you don't have some objective data about what effort you put in. And the time you spent is not a perfect representation of how much effort you put in, but it does show that you succeeded in trying. And it does show how much time you succeeded in spending. And a lot of tasks do require a significant amount of time on task. And if you're only able to work a half an hour a day and it's a project you think is going to need 10 hours a week, you know the problem is somehow figuring out how to keep yourself motivated to put in more time. Or if you are putting in 10 hours a week and you're not getting where you thought you were going, you know the problem is that something about the way you're approaching this, you're not getting results fast enough. You need to change the way you're doing it so that that time pays off. And if you don't have any idea, any objective idea of how much time you're putting in, you don't have it's all speculation. It's all just, you know, hypothesizing what might be going on. You need some objective data about how much time you've put in actually on this project, because otherwise it's amazing how distorted your view of it can be. And of course, keeping track of that, again, it can be unpleasant because both things, right? If you said you were going to put in 10 hours and you put in 3, or if you said you were going to put in 10 hours and get something done and you didn't get it done and you did put in the 10 hours, in either case, it's a little upsetting. But you need that data. You actually need to find out the data that what your expectations were wrong in some way. And the critical thing here is not have this kind of stuff be overhead. So I actually think, I don't know if I've made this clear. I actually think the first thing you need if you want to get a project on a roll is to put in these 3 things. Really simple daily planning, really simple weekly planning, and really simple time tracking. Because that's how you're going to be able to tell, oh yeah, I am working on the project and the time I'm putting on is getting results. And if you don't have some way to see that you're putting in the time and you don't have some way to notice what results you're getting consciously, explicitly, you cannot actually adjust course if you're not getting that. You can't celebrate the momentum you have, and you can't problem solve to figure out why you don't have it. You got to have those 3 basic things. You know, it's any project you get is a project you start, it's an experiment, right? It's an experiment. If you knew exactly how to do this and you were already completely motivated to do it, you wouldn't be worrying about getting your project on a roll. And I hope some of you have some projects that you are worried about, because I want to talk about that in just a minute. But the truth is, things are going to come in. You know, we had our pool overflow the other day. And so now suddenly I have new tasks on my project list, right? I need to call the pool company. I called them. I talked to the pool guy and they haven't done anything yet. I have to call them again, right? It's like hanging until we get the pool problem solved. Conflicts come up that you were totally not expecting. That you actually have to learn. Like, for example, one thing I learned about writing, I cannot talk to anyone before writing. If I have, I can say hello to my husband and good morning. And that's about it. I can't have a conversation with anybody. I can't even really read the newspaper before writing. Otherwise, I need kind of a fresh, clear context for writing. I found that out the hard way. I found that out by trying to do writing in the afternoon and finding I was wildly distracted, and then experimenting with an earlier morning and having it solved. I just, in the last launch, we had someone who was working on writing, and we got him to switch. He had a half an hour of email that he was doing before he would have breakfast, half an hour of email, and then writing. He was having all sorts of trouble. I said, why don't you put that email right after writing? Boom, his problem was solved. He learned faster. I had the problem, so he got to solve the problem faster. You don't know these things until you actually try to do it and you see where the difficulties are. You know, my husband likes to say the problem of survival is solved anew every day. The problem of survival is solved anew every day. And that is part of what you're doing when you put in this daily and weekly planning and a means of simple time tracking. That helps you identify and solve the problems of survival every day anew. If you have any clarity questions about this, this is the need for a scheduling infrastructure, basically. If you have any questions about that, clarity questions, please put them in the chat. I want to take a minute here to tell you a little bit about launch, because what you've gotten here is an overview of one of the tactics that we often talk about in launch, the scheduling infrastructure. As I said, launch is a group coaching program, starts January 1st. It runs 8 weeks. The purpose is to achieve a major goal. And almost everyone in the first week works on getting a scheduling infrastructure going. And some people work on it for longer. If they really don't have routines that work for them, it can actually take a couple of weeks or more to get things on a roll. And that usually the first thing you need to do to achieve a major goal is start putting in time regularly. Now, what I've said here, I actually hope is enough. This used to be all I did for helping people get a scheduling infrastructure. I'd tell them these three things and let them go. And that's great. If that's all you need, that's delightful. If you run into trouble, this is where coaching can be helpful, right? This is why I do coaching in launch, because what is stopping you could be one of different things. It could be a motivational problem. It could be a problem-solving problem. It could be a creativity issue. And, we've got 20 different self-study courses in the Thinking Lab, and we have a library of 50 tools. And one of the reasons it's helpful to get coaching is that exactly what the challenge is going to be different for everyone. And with coaching, I can tell you, I can help diagnose what it is and send you exactly to the tool that you need so that you can get over that hump faster. So you don't have to do what I did. I invented all these tools. Or, through laborious reading of other people, discovered these tools. Part of my goal is to make it easier. I did it the hard way. I don't want you to have to do it the hard way. Now, I want to say, particularly if you want to get your project on a roll, we actually are opening launch today for just 24 hours. Because next week in the Thinking Lab, we have a class directly related to this issue. We have a two-day class, Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be doing a class called Creating a Schedule, a Daily and Weekly Schedule That Works for You. And we're going to actually have people do this. We're going to have on the first day, we're going to have them figure out what they've got now and what they think the problem is with it. What do they have as their daily and weekly schedule or daily, weekly, processes. And then on the second day, we're going to actually problem solve and coach and help people figure out what the next iteration is. So if you want some hands-on help with this, we're opening up launch early. This means you get essentially an extra month in the Thinking Lab and this extra class live so that you can get that help now before hitting the ground running on January 1st. So you can sign up for launch at thinkingdirections.com/project-launch. Let's see if I've got that. No, I don't have that right in here. Hold on one second. I'm going to put it in the chat. And of course, it will show up in an email at the end. Okay. Before I open it up for questions, that's the promo for launch. I have another thing I'm going to show you about launch, but that's the basic promo. Before I open up for questions on anything, I'd like to actually do some proactive coaching to help some of you who actually have projects that you're concerned about getting on a roll. So I'm wondering if any of you who have a project that, as I'm talking about this, about daily and weekly overhead for it and problems that might come, if you would raise your hand, I would love to have two or three people who have projects they're a little concerned about getting on a roll that we could talk about. Because the real problem, the overhead is important. The overhead is important so you can see what the problems are. But the thing that you need help with is the motivational issues when you find out it's not going well. And that is going to happen. You're going to have setbacks and failures. It's going to happen. And you've probably already anticipated some setbacks and failures. So I haven't lured anyone in so far to talk about a project that they want to be working on, but I hope I'm going to lure you in. So let me just tell you what a setback and a failure are. Maybe this will help you. So a setback occurs when you worked on the project as you planned, but you discover it's more difficult than you anticipated. Now, why is that a problem? Well, apart from the fact that you wanted to get it done, the problem is that you actually now have discovered something, that you're missing something. Right? So like, suppose you go on a diet and you actually follow the diet plan and you don't lose weight. You know, this is upsetting, right? You put in all this effort and you don't lose weight and you really put in the effort. And that can be very discouraging, and that can make you want to stop doing anything, which is of course not the message to take from this. It actually is a real achievement to follow a diet for a few weeks, even if you don't lose weight. And the things that you learned from following the diet for a few weeks, even though you didn't lose weight, will in fact help you to tweak the diet and tweak what you're doing so you do lose weight. But it's a little demoralizing. It's demoralizing because you aren't actually getting the payoff from your effort. And this is a big theme of all of my work. If you're putting in effort, you need to get a commensurate payoff. Now, sometimes the payoff is not in exactly the coin you wish it were in. Like sometimes, like let's take the diet case. Sometimes you actually need to get pleasure in. For example, we had someone who was trying a new diet, didn't know if it was going to help lose weight, but was taking pleasure in finding new recipes that met that requirement, and actually got a lot of joy and pleasure out of finding new recipes while changing diets, and eventually did start losing weight from it. But the payoff was not necessarily in the weight loss as she was going. It was in the fun of trying out new recipes and finding things that she liked, and of sticking to a plan to try new recipes every day. And that takes some creativity, right? And that's needed so that you're not discouraged by not getting the original result you wanted on the schedule you wanted. The reason it's difficult is that it's easy to take these kinds of failures personally. You say, gee, I put in all this effort and I didn't succeed. Something's wrong with me. So something isn't wrong with you. It may be that there's something you don't know, or it may be that there's some skill you need to develop. But it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. The fact that you aren't omniscient and omnipotent is not something wrong with you. It's no person is omniscient and omnipotent. It means that you actually now have some data about what it is you need to learn. And part of the data you get is about your own capacity. Like for writing, a lot of the things I've learned about motivation, I've learned from writing problems, which I've had for a long time. And I still have writing problems. I have different writing problems. I'm able to turn out newsletters pretty often. It used to be newsletters were my bane. Now, if I have 4 hours, I can turn out a newsletter, which is, I have to say, just fabulous. I don't always have 4 hours, but if I have it, I can turn out a newsletter, which is a major accomplishment for myself. But I still have problems with the book project. And, you know, just the other, just a couple of weeks ago, a week or so ago, I realized that the latest thing that I was working on was somehow too hard for me. My mind was shutting down trying to work on it. I was being completely unsuccessful in actually putting on time. This gets to the second, this is a failure, right? If you don't actually put the time in task, that's a failure. If you put the time in task and you don't get the result you wanted, that's not a failure, that's a setback. But if you said you were going to put in this time and you didn't put it in, that's a failure. That needs to be looked at. And you need to understand, why was this a failure? And in my case, I realized there's something about that goal that like tied my motivation in knots. And I'd set it up to get feedback of a certain kind, and I could not for the life of me turn out anything to get that feedback. which, you know, it still doesn't totally make sense to me. But what I saw is that, you know, I was paralyzing myself by my goal and I needed a different goal. So the last 2 days I've been working on, some of you know, I have a, in the Thinking Lab, the first two sort of books I wrote, which exist only in the Thinking Lab, are the Condensation Handbook and the Definitions Handbook. And I thought, well, what if I were to write a Motivation Handbook? Because I dashed those off, right? Those I actually wrote as email articles to people over 3 or 4 years in the late 90s and early 2000s, and then just edited them to a compilation. I mean, they're not, it's not perfect, but there's a lot of good information there. And I've been working on that easily for 2 days. It's like that completely unblocked me and has clarified some of the issues that I need to think about. So I found a way that, given my existing capacity, my existing knowledge, my existing skill, my existing values, I found a way I could make forward progress. And that's what you need to do when you have a quote unquote failure. Find a way that you can make forward progress. And sometimes that takes a little creativity, but that's actually the fun part. The important thing is not to get sucked into self-doubt or self-criticism. If you get sucked into self-doubt, self-doubt is horrible. It's a horrible experience. And yet you do feel it. You feel self-doubt when you say you're going to do something, then you can't do it. It's like, what's wrong with me? Okay, that is a normal emotion to have in that situation. But you don't want to act on that emotion. The way acting on that emotion looks like running away and eating a cookie, right? What you need to do is you say, okay, huh, gee, there's something about my capacity that's not as big as I thought it was. You know, gee, I thought I could solve that problem easily. Apparently not. Okay. Not the end of the world. What is the issue? What can I do? That's what you do when self-doubt hits. Now, on the other hand, if what you don't do is criticize yourself, like, oh, I'm so lazy. I said I was going to put in this work and I didn't put in this work. I'm just a lazy bum. That's not going to get you anywhere. That just actually gives you what that actually does when you characterize yourself as lazy or whatever. That gives an explanation for why you aren't getting anything done. It gives you like a big excuse for not ever getting anything done. That doesn't help. And it discourages you. So it totally doesn't work. It totally doesn't work. Now, I noticed, so these kinds of issues need to be handled constructively. And the main thing to handle them constructively, don't take the setbacks and failures personally. Take them as experimental data. It's like, gee, I thought this was the way to do it. Gee, I've got this evidence that this wasn't the way. What is the right way to do this? Let's see what we can do. Now, I got in the chat, Karen volunteered to talk about getting a project on a roll. Stephanie and Jack, I see your hands up. Do you have projects you are trying to get on a roll, or do you have questions? Questions I'd like to do in a little bit. But
project?
You have a project? Okay, Jack, do you have a project you want to get on a roll?
I wanted to make a suggestion to you. I was writing emails 1 week to a bunch of my English students, and all of a sudden I said, why don't I make this into a book?
Yes, well, I could do that. I have enough blog posts, I could make a book. But I'd like to talk on the topic right now here, Jack.
I just wanted to say, put your book on Kindle.
I can do that if I want to.
Doesn't cost you any money.
I can do that if I want to. Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let's do Karen and Stephanie. So Karen, you want to go first and tell us a little bit about this project of decluttering your house that has some difficult parts that you're a little nervous about.
Well, I'd like to continue this winter, January, February. I've done this 2 years previous in launches and was successful both times because of launch. But this time I would be, and I choose January, February because it's dark and cold here. I'm in Toronto.
You can't go
and
out.
So it's right. Not, I go skating and various things, but there's still an awful lot of, you know, long evenings, which is a great thing to do is to take on a project. So, but this time The first time I, 2 years ago, I guess, I decided to do it to figure out how to declutter my house, which that eventually it worked very, very well. I did figure that out. The second time, I just took another step and did more work. This time, I'm now at the part where I'm need to approach the two most difficult parts of my house. And I'm actually, in spite of those wins previously, I feel, just thinking about it today, because I haven't started to plan it as a project yet, but just thinking about it today, I'm sort of already overwhelmed by it.
Okay. Well, let's take one of those two difficult parts and tell us why you're overwhelmed. How about that?
Yes, sure. One of them would be I call it sort of my office and my papers. The
Okay.
other, yeah, so that would be one of them.
Why don't we just talk about that? I told
Okay,
you everyone's going to
sure.
relate to this, Karen. I
Okay.
totally see why it's overwhelming just hearing that, right? But tell us why you're overwhelmed.
Well, partially that it just no order here. I have papers in about four places in my house. My dining room table is my office, so there's stacks of things here where I'm seated now. I have two or three other places in the house downstairs where I have papers that are sort of deep-sixed to varying different degrees. I even have some, I think, that are in the garage, which I won't attempt in the winter, but that's just it kind of makes my head swim to even start to think. I mean, I could take a piece, but I does at the just at the thought of it, it makes me I feel overwhelmed.
Okay, great. So one of the things that's really important here, right? Is what I said at the beginning is you need to know why you're doing this. So you want to declutter, and that is sort of saying the negative that you want to get rid of, right? You want to, so tell us what the goal is in terms of decluttering, and let's see if we can find a positive goal for you.
Well, I'd like to, I mean, a couple of things. I think in general, I'd like to declutter the house because eventually, someday, even if it's 10 or 15 years from now, I will want to move and there will be too many things to do in a short period of time. Even if it was 6 months, it would be far too short. But that's the longer goal reason. But the shorter goal or the shorter time frame reason is I just like to have a better handle on things. Typical to probably many of us, I can usually find everything I want, but when I go looking for things, I think, why do I have all this other stuff? And why isn't it organized, even better? Or it's just.
Or at all, right? If it's stuff in the garage in this, basement or
Yes,
whatever.
yes, yes.
And about, so let me just ask you, of this stuff, you said you've got it in four or five different places and lots of stuff. About how much of it do you think you really want? Like, do you think you're going to be cutting it down by 50%, 80%, 95%? What do you think?
Interesting. Interesting. At most, I'd say 50%. To begin with, excuse me, one of the things I learned from doing the decluttering, and since I may have the luxury of a bit of time here, is a bit of time on the task over than another few years, is that it was effective to look at everything, but the diff really difficult things to decide on, I decided the next year. I got rid of, I did a first pass, and it was
Okay.
easy to get rid of a lot of things at the first pass, but the things that I really was very ambivalent about, I just put them back, like in the dining room, for instance. And then the
Okay.
next year, when I came and looked at them again, it was a lot clearer to me that some of those things, okay, a year later, haven't used them, they're not really meaningful, okay, they can go. So I feel like that might be part of how I would
Okay.
approach this. So I'd say 50, no more than 50% to begin with.
Okay, great. Now that sounds like a way easier task. Like find the 50% of junk in the papers and get rid of it. Is that, I mean, does that motivate you, Karen?
Well, it does, except that I'm attached to all of it.
Okay, see the re
I
this is the
feel
reason.
attached to all of it. I
So
haven't even looked at it.
this is really great, right? So the thing I want to say is that This is where now the motivational issue is. So, like you start any project like this, you start with the goal, you get clear on what the positive goal is. She has actually a pretty clear positive goal. Reduce the amount of paper to 50%, the part that actually is important, so it's easier to find, right? It's a pretty clear goal. It's a good goal. It's a perfectly, you know, I'm sure we could tweak it in launch, but if you want, but whatever. But then the problem is she won't actually want to throw away any of those papers. Okay. Yay, good to notice. Good to notice. What do you think is going to be the problem in throwing away anything?
I'll want it later.
So you're afraid you're going to want it later. Okay. What and so give me the logical answer to that. Is there a logical answer to that?
Well, I guess that if I have a criteria by which I'm judging whether how to keep things or not, I may be feel more confident about getting rid of things that don't meet that criteria.
Right. Okay. So here's something that might help. What if you were to go through a few piles and see if you can figure out stuff that you're willing to get rid of and what the criteria is? Right. So again, it's actually one scale down from what you have, but it would make it easier to get started, and you wouldn't feel that you had to throw out things that you wanted, right? Because it may be that in fact a lot of that stuff you don't want.
So say that again, if
So
you would,
what if you
about
were to
the
make, what
criteria.
if you were planning to go through a few piles with the goal of figuring out what you can easily get rid of because you don't really don't care, and what the criteria is, right? So, and one of two things will happen. Either it will be half the stuff is actually stuff you're willing to throw away, which let's stipulate it may or let's stipulate it's 25% you're willing to throw away. You'll also have looked at a couple of piles and say, you know, I think, you know, you might decide to get that 25% out of everything instead of 50%. Or you might say, you know, having looked at this, I actually think I could set the standard a little bit tighter and, you know, like not have anything that's 7 years old that I haven't actually looked at before. Just making that up. I have no idea if that's a good thing. But once you've looked at a couple of piles, you actually probably have some ideas on that. So you
Interesting. Oh,
see,
that's great.
does this
It's
seem
a
less
place to
overwhelming?
start. It does. It does. I can say, I can see even just looking at my desk that that doesn't seem overwhelming to do to approach that
Right. That's
way.
how you get a project on the roll. You find this way, and then, you know, even this may not be easy for Karen, which is why you need the daily and the weekly reviews, planning type things. So like she's going to plan to do this like maybe 3 days a week or whatever it is, Karen. And then see how it goes. And if she got discouraged Tuesday night doing this, then Wednesday morning she does a little bit, oh, so I need something a little bit easier. Okay, today I'm going to make it even easier. I'm going to do whatever it is. Or if it went really easily, it's like, okay, let's do more of that. Let's celebrate. And that little extra review and planning can help you capitalize on your successes and avoid making the failures expand. Good for now?
That's great because I can look at the launch initiative document, which is
Yep.
fabulous and really helpful as well. That's
Okay,
great. That's
great.
great. Thank you.
Great. Now, I notice Harry's hand is up. Harry, did you want to make a comment or did you actually want help on a project?
You got me.
You
I
wanted to make
wanted
a
to
comment.
make a comment about Karen's task.
So can you hold on while we do Stephanie's and then we're going to do comments and questions in a little bit? Is that okay? All right, so Stephanie, would you like to tell us a little bit about the project you need to get on a roll?
All right, it's related to my book on getting rid of tax. And the issue I identified is I can talk about it to people who don't know. I meet a new person and I tell them about it and I get excited and I'm enthusiastic and I can wax poetic and they'll get enthusiastic. When I sit down to write, that it's so much harder. And I was like, what can I do to bring that enthusiasm I have for telling people about it to the writing process?
Okay. And so just to be clear, what you need, what are you trying to write at this point? What is the next writing goal for you right now? I mean, because I
Any
know you've done a lot of work.
any of it, any part of it. It's I can do an overview of the book to someone. I can talk about in depth, but actually putting it on paper, whether it's an overview or getting the in depth, it just gets turgid and off on
Yep.
tangents.
Yep.
So how do I bring that enthusiasm and the clarity that I'm able to muster speaking to the writing?
Okay. So this is actually a really important point, right? Because what I hear is you've tried to do it and it doesn't meet your needs. You've read stuff. When you try to just bring that context to writing, you don't like how it comes out. Right. And this is it's really important. So now the first analysis here is you need to bring the enthusiasm. But are you really lacking enthusiasm when you write?
It's what I came up with as a possible solution is a three-point plan.
Hold on. I asked a very specific question because you gave me a diagnosis, which I don't think is actually the diagnosis. So I want to know, do you lack enthusiasm when you sit down to write?
It would appear I do.
That's not enthusiasm is an emotion, Stephanie. You can actually introspect.
I haven't satisfied myself with the writing that I've hit the right,
That's not enthusiasm, right? That's clarity, or it's punch, right? Which are things that are not the same in oral versus written. Because orally, you can use body language. You can, if something is unclear, the person asks a question and you answer the question. It's way easier to do things orally than it is in writing. Way, way easier. And with speaking, if they're not following, you can actually tell whether they're interested. And so you can adjust. And then when they perk up, you focus more on that. So it's just, I mean, you get feedback in real time when you're talking. So part of the challenge of writing is you got to do all of that. You actually have to figure out how they're going to react. I mean, I don't want to say it quite this way. But you need to actually be doing some of the work to draw their attention in a way where you're prepared to keep them interested and you're prepared to know what their difficulties are going to be so you can address them in order. So writing is different from talking. And enthusiasm is not the challenge. The challenge is actually writing skills, right? Which and it is harder to write. It's easier to write turgid prose than it is to write interesting prose. This is true, okay. So this actually demonstrates one of the points I said, which is sometimes when like because you put time on task, but you weren't satisfied with your results. Have a problem putting time on task. See, Karen was actually feeling like she didn't want to put time on task because it was too overwhelming. You put time on task, but then you're not happy with the results. And that is so that so it's good. We've got two examples. We've got the two issues that I wanted to talk about. So here's the risk. When that happens, you know you have discovered either a lack of knowledge, a lack of values, or a lack of skill. Now, knowing a little bit about you and this project and how much time you put in, I don't think it's a lack of values. It's either a lack of knowledge or a lack of skill. So what do you think in looking just because that's what it is. If you put in an amount of time, you don't get the results you wanted, this is what you look for. Which do you think it is,
I
Stephanie?
think it's more lack of skills.
Okay. Something about how do you write to make it interesting? Something about that. Great. So now this is something that you could make now smaller assignments on. Right. So you could try on a weekly basis to just not write a book, but write like take one thing that's going to be in, you know, like give me one of your ideas. You got a million ideas. Give me one of them.
Using the courts to finance voluntarily with my
Okay.
via voluntarily.
Okay, great. So if what you're concerned about is making it be interesting and compelling, what if you were to just try to write 800 words on, wouldn't it be fantastic if this. And just take that and make that be your assignment for the week, with the idea that you're going to try to make that be really exciting. And you're going to see how hard that is, but it's going to be a smaller task. It's going to be more likely to succeed. And if it doesn't succeed, you're going to be more likely to be able to figure out what the problem is, or to get help on figuring out what the problem is.
Oh, I like that. The smaller assignments. I was
yes.
looking the whole book.
Yes, impossible.
Work.
Right.
It was just crushing me.
Yes, and it was crushing you. Exactly, exactly. And so part of this is when you, so it's fine to have thought this was the way it was going to work. And then what you do is you reduce it down to something, you learn from that as to what the problem is. And then you find a smaller thing where you can start developing that skill and actually seeing progress as you go. That's what's critical for momentum.
Okay, that's great. That's helpful. Thanks, Jean.
But for now, okay, great. Terrific. Okay, so now I am going to turn to questions, but before I do that, I'm actually going to go refresh my water glass, and I'm going to, so this is the end of the like official presentation, and then we're going to switch to questions and additional coaching. But as a transition, I am going to show you a video that we made of snippets from the launch celebration call. So this is just a little transition. It takes a few minutes, but it's really fun to watch. So I hope you guys will watch it. So let me see, share sound portion of screen. This should do it. Let's see. Hold on a second. This is it. Okay. So I'll be right back with my water glass, but I'm just going to run this ad in the meantime.
The initiative was a success.
It went amazingly well.
I got what I wanted.
I don't know how it gets any better than that.
So happy.
It was the source of my happiest moment.
I want to celebrate because I've accomplished my initiative. Yay.
This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. 3 times a year, we run a program called Launch, a group coaching program to help you achieve a major goal in 8 weeks. At the end of the 8 weeks, we have a celebration call, and here are some snippets of what that sounds like.
June, would you like to celebrate?
A few weeks ago, you had said, sometimes you really do have to fight for your values. This launch, I really learned what that meant. And it wasn't fighting in the sense of a struggle. It was getting clear about what I really wanted and having that level of clarity and love for what I want.
Yeah.
It's like the most peaceful thing in the world.
It's yourself, right? You're clear on yourself. Yeah. Fantastic.
And Gee, would you like to celebrate?
Yeah. Your tough love was very important there. Snapping me out of my particular thought process was really good. The self-coaching model was incredibly powerful for me.
It's great if you can come to a coaching call and get help, but it is 1,000 times better if you can do a self-coaching model at your desk in the morning and not need help. So, Philip, would you like to celebrate?
Yeah, absolutely. At first, I was sad. Then I remember the original purpose was to get myself out of depression, and I did, like halfway through the initiative.
Yay, Philip, fantastic. That's great.
I already did achieve the goal.
And you're well on your way to your next goal, right?
Definitely. Right.
This is what builds confidence, builds self-esteem, builds pride. Yeah, all right.
Absolutely.
Terrific. All right. Thanks for sharing that. So, Susanna, would you like to celebrate?
What I learned is the importance of the initiative page, the importance of identifying closure.
Yeah. You really need to turn that big goal into an objective, into a key result, into a task. And so congratulations on that. That's really important. Amy, would you like to celebrate?
Yeah. I didn't start any new things. But now that I have this system where I know it's going to pop up when it needs to, I started reading books to my kids out loud in the last couple of weeks. I felt like I couldn't do that for so long because if I did that, I was going to forget to do the other thing. It's great.
You really have a trusted system and it frees right. you to be selfish. That's what right. I mean. That nice. Is fantastic. That is actually fantastic news. Who would like to go next? Carl.
I learned about being able to take an empathy bath, problem solving, getting unstuck. just overall being a better thinker.
You have made real changes. It's been really noticeable, Carl. Yay.
Andrew, would you like to just do your celebration quickly?
I learned a lot from you and from everybody else about old baggage. I found times when I was using the old baggage as an excuse to work on old baggage instead of doing the real work.
If you see what's really going on, then you can find the values and you can move forward. And that's one of the reasons to come together to celebrate. It really is. Ryan, would you like to celebrate?
Yes, I would. I've completed both of my 4-week goals on schedule this launch, which was having my 9-year-old son watch my video game gameplay on YouTube and give me some constructive criticism as well as some encouragement. So it was fantastic. Yeah.
Right. That's really exciting. At that moment, it was low-hanging fruit in effect.
You know, definitely part of being in this program and listening to other people's challenges and successes and part of your goal setting course as well, right? Which was, yep. I had kind of self-expression and communication as more long-term values, but then I was like, you know, finding a way to make that more short-term, that I could get it in the immediate horizon. And I was like, you know, I could just publish this now. So I pulled them forward.
All right. Fantastic. That's great, Ryan. Congratulations on how that all's come together.
Thank you.
All right. And would you like to celebrate?
Yes. I listened to every one of the calls and got a lot out of it. So my initiative was to build sort of a system about health, sleeping, eating, and exercise. I would have challenges at work, and I came up with this analogy for overloads. I was like, I was putting my finger in the book and then going to a different page, and I would reach the point where I ran out of fingers and I would go eat a cookie to compensate. Once I sort of got that cleared up, I'm averaging over 7.5 hours of sleep.
That's fantastic, Kevin, and it really took work.
Skylar, would you like?
I'm actually going to stop it there because it just feels like it's been going on for a long time. But there's 3 more minutes. It's actually a fun reel, and you'll get a link to it on the way out. But I'd like to turn it over to questions. So is Harry, you had a question or a comment or something. Would you like to go? I think you need to unmute.
Is Karen still on?
I hope. Yes, I'm here. Yes, thank you.
Did you implicitly develop a system with those 4 places that you keep your papers, that do they differ in how immediate the need is for them? In other words, in the dining room, is that the things you maybe will need in a month or maybe have looked at last month? Is it time-based or is it based on something else?
It is time-based.
Oh, well, you've got a system there. Move things through that. And when you get to the last bin in the garage, that's stuff that you haven't looked at in 7 years, as Jean said. And then you can throw that away. And then with exceptions, you have to allow yourself to say, well, I can't throw this away. This is memorabilia or whatever. You can make exceptions, but basically the idea would be whatever gets to the garage, the next step is the trash bin. And you keep moving things along, and it will be clutter.
That's helpful to look at it that way, because then things are already in stages of heading out the door.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you had done that.
You may actually be able to take one of those, like the garage or the next to the garage, and use that as the low-hanging fruit. See how easy it is to reduce that pile. Might be a good place to start. Great. Terrific.
Right. Thank you. Right. Thanks. All right. Thanks, Harry. Thanks, Jean.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Any questions about why these 3 things, daily and weekly planning and a way to keep track of your time, or any help that anybody wants with another project?
I think I have another suggestion.
All right, Jack.
Well, Stephanie said that she's very enthusiastic when talking about her book, but not so enthusiastic when writing. So I would say, why don't you record what you talk about and then write from the recording? I don't know, just something I thought up.
That can help. It can be, transcripts are not nearly as good as you think they are. That's the problem with that. So I understand her issue of having it not be as good as she wants. Okay. Who else has an issue that they would like to talk about? Andy.
Hi.
Hi.
I got kind of I want to go into the next launch, but I've got lots of different projects I might select. Do you have any advice about how to go out, winnowing out the candidates?
Sure. Is this something you'd like to talk through now or just hear some abstract advice? I could do both. I could give abstract advice and then we could try to do it in your case.
Best I could offer right now would just be whatever's top of mind.
Okay. So then let's talk about it abstractly and then talk a little bit about the things that are top of mind. So there are a couple of different things here. One is you need to look at the projects and see how much emotional energy they take. Because I do think that if there are a few that are going to be emotionally disruptive, you need to be very selective in deciding which one you're going to prioritize. And if you're like, because you're going to need to put your emotional energy into that. And if there are like three things you want to do and you think they're all emotionally disruptive, you need to actually put some time into number two and number three to figure out how you can do it without it being so emotionally disruptive. And that's a creative problem solving process, but it can be done. You know, similarly to what we were talking about with Stephanie, right? That she was trying to do this writing a certain way, and then it was upsetting. And actually with Karen too, right? That the way they were trying to go about it was overwhelming or frustrating in some way. And so we found different ways that they could go about it, which we think will not be so frustrating. So that's part of it, is you really need to make a big division between the routine stuff and the emotionally disruptive stuff. The other thing I would say is that if the other thing to think about is what is going to be the biggest payoff for you, right? Because this is really an issue of prioritizing. And it may be that you need some stuff in place before you can actually deal with certain issues. And so for example, I mean, I don't know if this is a good example or not, but for me, I basically need to be writing on a regular schedule or else I'm not motivated to do any of the other work. It's really amazing. I can get a whole lot done, but if I'm not working on my book, for, you know, some, you know, 6 to 10 to 12 hours a week, I get really unhappy and it's difficult to get me to do anything else. And you need to know that about yourself. You need to know, like, for example, here's another thing. This used to drive my roommate, and she was actually my neighbor after the first year, but at MIT, it used to drive her crazy because as we approached finals week, I would drop everything and I would spend a day cleaning my room. And I mean, you know, putting everything away, vacuuming, dust cleaning, everything. She'd be in there studying and I was around with the vacuum cleaners. Like, what are you doing? But I couldn't like get myself into study mode until my dorm room was clear and organized and had all flat surfaces and didn't have, you know, all the detritus from the during the term when you're, you know, deadline after deadline after deadline. And so that's basically how I started my reading week every year. And, you know, she reminded me of this a few years ago. And that's kind of how I run. I mean, sometimes that I need to drop everything and just tidy up and get everything organized. And I told that story about the 44 piles. The reason I know there are 44 piles is that I had total chaos in my office. This is now, God, this has got to be 2009 or 2010. This is a long time ago. And it was just chaos, right? And so I decided to get organized. And that's how I know there were 44 piles, because that's how I got organized. I got everything organized into separate piles with a name. And that's how I knew I have 44 piles. And they were all actually physically coordinated so that I could actually work at a clean desk with 44 piles behind me. So That's something I know about myself. And you need to know that about yourself too. So those are the two things I would say for prioritizing. What do you need most to kind of get your life in order? And what is going to be most emotionally disruptive? And that's how you can start prioritizing. So I'm curious, Andy, does some of the things off the top of your head, you want to talk about them in relation to this high level division?
Well, I would like to get a scheduling infrastructure going because I've got a barely existent one at this point.
Okay. So tell me what the payoff for that would be.
I think I've had a lot more control over my time.
Okay.
And I wouldn't have the sense of, to say it a different way, the sense of being out of control. I have always got my head filled with things I know that need to get done, and they just all keep getting put off. And
right.
It's like everything is out of control.
Okay, great. So, and this is really important. So the feeling of being out of control is a horrible feeling. It has self-doubt associated with it. So it's like a really horrible, horrible feeling. Now, I wonder, I'm just going to ask a question, knowing a little bit about your situation. Do you think that's also, that out of control is also like a physical thing? Because I know that you've had to do stuff. You moved into a new apartment. You had to move apartments twice because the first one didn't work out. You know, there's a lot of stuff that in your physical environment that also has been disrupted in the recent past. Do you think that that's part of the out of control feeling?
There's definitely an aspect of the physical chaos contributing to the sense of lack of control.
Right. Because what I'm hearing, because the reason I'm asking this is that that might make a routine that could be like, instead of it being quite a quote unquote a scheduling infrastructure, it could be a daily structure where you spend, you know, 15 minutes every morning just making everything one level more tidy, or maybe a half an hour. I don't know. I'm making that up. Or maybe even twice a day. But you see, you could get on a routine where you have some kind of getting things in order on a regular routine every day. And then maybe a slightly different thing once a week. It may be that physical order might actually be the low-hanging fruit for you that would then get you some momentum. And the reason I say that is that if what you want is to get into things into control, which I am extremely sympathetic for, the problem is just getting planning the day and planning the week. Is planning is very good, but the actual getting in control is in the doing. And if you just put in the planning and you don't have the doing working, it could actually make the situation more discouraging. So it might be better for you to put in a doing plan where it's physical. Because if you do tidying, unlike just a planning process, you actually see results. You actually get a payoff every 15 minutes you put in tidying. Every 15 minutes you do cleaning dishes, you get cleaner dishes. Every 15 minutes you spend organizing, you know, mail, you have more organized mail. And that can be really important for getting momentum, is find something that's going to make you feel more in control. You're going to see, and then once you have that, right? Suppose you started your day every day with literally 15 minutes of some kind of tidying. If that becomes something you really like, well, then you could maybe put in 15 minutes of planning and you'll have not just momentum to do some planning, but also some success under your belt to follow through on planning. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So something like that might be a way to get that to start working for you.
All right.
Is that good for now, or would you like to talk about something else?
That gives me a place to start.
Okay. All right. Why don't you experiment with that in the short term and see if that's good for you?
Mm-hmm. I'll do that.
Because that's the really critical thing, is to find something that pays off for you you know, that the price performance ratio is good. That is the critical thing. That is the really critical thing. Good.
Thank you very much.
All right, great. Anybody else have questions or want some help on anything? I'm game to help some more. All right, going once, going twice. All right, I think we've reached a natural conclusion. So thank you everyone who came. And again, the launch is open for registration for one day only. It will reopen, you know, later in the month. But it's open for one day only here. And I will put the link in the chat. And Karen, you had a question or a comment?
Well, I was poking and poking to try and change my so that I could speak, but perhaps it's too late. I was going to ask you for some other advice.
Sure. No, you can get some other advice. That's all right.
Thank you. I'm finding that there are sort of, I don't know what to call them, everyday things, which are not necessarily even every day, but that get in my way of focusing on my some bigger goals. Okay. For instance, as I think you may know, I just recently had to buy a car. And that took a fair bit of doing, and it's fine. I'm really pleased with it now, but it's nothing really urgent. I don't have a big goal that is, you know, pressing, but I feel like since I've, you know, stopped working at the end of April, I've been productive. I've been very pleased with a lot of the things that I've been able to do. And there keeps being things, big things. There's always things to do around the house. And I don't think that I'm actually, I mean, I know when I'm trying to put stuff in my own way. I feel like there's, I'm not getting to some really important personal. I want to figure out like my own value hierarchy, for instance. And there are some big, some important things, and I'm not getting to them because I keep, you know, getting somewhat derailed by these other tasks that I have to do.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, I think here I would definitely look at hard the thing that you think you want to do that's important to you. Like the way you put this, like clarifying a value hierarchy, as described that way is a little bit problematical. I mean, I think that you can do this, but I think the way to do it is in conjunction with some kind of a central purpose, figuring out some kind of a central purpose, which is a lot more motivating. Figuring out some kind of an idea of a central purpose is more motivating than trying to clarify your value hierarchy.
Right. Okay. And I mean, that is finally one of the goals that I have is to clarify a central purpose.
Yeah. Okay. So then.
And that seems amorphous. It seems huge. It seems difficult.
Well, yes. So there are a couple of parts about that. So there is, you know, for people who are not familiar with the Thinking Lab, there is a class on developing a central purpose there. Mm-hmm. And it is something that does require time on task, where you do some thinking every day. So it's one of these things where if you have a daily routine, you can add in a half an hour a day thinking about central purpose. And part of the way that class is set up is try to make every day interesting so that you actually get fascinated with every day's thinking about this. So that it's like, you find out this interesting thing about yourself or this thing that you might enjoy doing or that thing. And every one of them is kind of exciting and it's about you. So, I mean, really, it's like, you know, talking about yourself is fun. Well, thinking about yourself and your life is fun too. So part of that, I think, could get momentum on that and get so that was actually rewarding. It does require a decision that this is important. And, you know, I think that's something that's worth thinking about. Is that the priority right now? Or, you know, you may have, I hear in the background, maybe a little bit of self-criticism that you haven't gotten to this. And you may really have needed whatever it is, 8 months to kind of solidify the new normal here.
Yes. Right? Yes. Makes sense.
So part of it is, I would really look at why do you think you aren't interested in it, and what's your evidence that you are Because you think you may be kind of avoiding it by bringing in other things. And I would look at that. I would spend a little time thinking about that, right? Mm-hmm. And that may be true and it may not be true.
Yes.
Don't know which it is. But if you have that doubt in the back of your head, the thing to do is some introspection on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Giving contrary motivation a fair hearing. But if it comes down to it's really important and you're just worried about doing it, we can coach you on that.
Okay, great. Okay? Thank you. Because
it doesn't have to be big and overwhelming. And the truth is, I always, in the class, I tell people it could take 6 months. But I think every person who has worked on central purpose in launch has actually come up with a central purpose by the end of the 8 weeks. And that's quite a few people. That's, probably 10 people who have done that as their launch project and have actually, which surprised me. I didn't realize that would happen, but one way or another, I think that's what has happened. I can't think of anyone who didn't actually get some real clarity and direction in the course of the 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What was the, you mentioned a tactic or a course or something to look at for introspection?
For introspection, you need any of the ones that give contrary motivation and fair hearing. So you could use AnList, you could use Empathy Bath, you could use Introspection 101 or Introspection Training Wheels. Could use Judge Your Neighbor if you think it's a big deal. There's I'm rattling these guys off for people who are not in the Thinking Lab. They are available in the Thinker's Toolkit. The ones that I just listed are all in the Thinker's Toolkit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good for now, Karen?
Yes, okay, thank great. You very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, terrific. I happy to oblige. Okay, so now I really will sign off. Thank you very, very much. And I hope some of you will be joining launch. It's going to be terrific. The New Year's launch is always terrific. Everyone has a lot of energy. We got a lot done. So I look forward to seeing some of you on that. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jean. Thank you.
You're welcome. Amen.